From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available real-time traffic alerts. More at acura.com/RDX.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining, I do.
Meats raised close to home. That's the topic tonight on Mouthful, so stay tuned for the wine country's most delicious hour.
You fry some garlic. It's then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. Thanks for tuning in and happy Earth Day. Hope you've had a nice time of it. It was so nice to get a whole bunch of rain, but oh, did it make people nervous? So many events in Northern California yesterday and today, and including a big Earth Day celebration at Iron Horse Vineyards. And I know that Audrey Sterling was very nervous last night, but hard to criticize the rain when we need it so badly. Where was I? Somewhere yesterday. Oh, I know. Last night I was at the Hospices of Sonoma, which is the big Pinot Noir Festival. It took place this year at the Warren Dutton Ag Pavilion on Schoen Ranch. And the vineyard manager from Chateau St. Jean, I think, was talking about how badly he felt for people this year up in this area who raise cattle and sheep and that sort of thing, that the grass has been so low to the ground, literally, that he's wondered if pasturing has been difficult. So we have some people in the studio tonight that might be able to address that question, and that we have Brock Vollman, Indiana, Span?
Yes, Span.
Of Black Sheep Farm. You've been on before, Brock, I know. And haven't you?
No.
You haven't?
No.
God, I dreamed about talking to you.
No.
I must have just transposed you from talking to you at the farmer's market to thinking it was here. Because I remember talking about the farm in Occidental and getting ready to move because you needed to expand.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I won't say welcome back to Mouthful. And I'll really try hard not to make a fool of myself anymore tonight. And Marisa Gugiana,
yes,
Sonoma Direct, I learned about you sitting in this very chair not that long ago. You work with a number of ranchers.
About 20.
And you sell, is it veal and beef and lamb?
Lamb. We're working on veal right now.
Uh-huh.
And, we work with 20 lamb ranchers.
Well, both of you, welcome to, all of you, welcome to Mouthful. And, you know, it seems like you can't turn on the radio or open a magazine or newspaper in, like, the last 3 or 4 months without reading about eating local. It just seems to have exploded recently. And now there's the program or sort of study, I guess you'd say, going on through SF Gate and the San Francisco Chronicle. They've taken 3 families, and they're seeing if they can eat. I think they've given them 150-mile...
The locavore limits.
Yes, and there's an urban family, a suburban family, and a rural family, and they're going to see if they can do it, and they've been allowed a budget of $70 per week per person.
Cool. Well, that's not bad.
That's $210 a week for groceries for a family. Three doesn't seem bad to me. Yeah. Anyway, one of the things that I think, if you don't pay attention to local agriculture, I think that's one of the things you think of first. Well, am I going to have to give up eating meat, you know, if you happen to be a carnivore? So anyway, why don't we start out by both of you telling us what you do? You want to start, Brock? Deanna, start.
Myself and Deanna run a livestock ranch in Potter Valley, and we raise sheep and goats and lots of pigs and cattle. And then we have the animals butchered USDA for us and market all that meat at farmers markets locally.
Now, you started out in Occidental.
Yeah.
Was it with just pigs?
Just pigs, initially. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of built on itself.
Yeah. How many years ago? It wasn't that long ago, is it?
No, we're on year five now, is that right? Mm-hmm. Year five now. So, yeah, we just started with a couple of pigs because we wanted to have good pork. And we were eating pork that we didn't really know where it came from or wasn't the highest quality. So we got a couple for ourselves and Roberta and Sharonda. And, it went great, and the meat was beautiful, so we just decided to keep on going. And,
mm-hmm. And now Potter Valley, near Ukiah.
Yes.
And when did you move up there?
We've been there since last July 4th.
Mm-hmm. And I assume you've gone to a lot more land than what you had in Occidental?
We were leasing in Occidental, and it wasn't much space. It was 4 acres. And we really maximized the space as much as we could. It was, every single nook was being used for something. But we were able to purchase some property up in Potter Valley and find a couple bigger agricultural leases. So now we have 137 acres that we own and another 50 acres that we lease.
Wow, congratulations. Yeah. That's great.
Oh, man.
So you started out with two pigs. Mm-hmm. How many animals do you have now?
It changes pretty rapidly.
Yeah, it does.
Lots of babies lately.
But, I guess so, huh? So about 40 to 60 pigs at any moment?
40 to 60 pigs at any moment. I think right now we have over 60. I think about 65 right now.
The babies make it seem like less.
But total animals, there's close to 200.
Close to 200. Mm-hmm. And are you able to sell everything that you produce through farmers markets? And which markets do you attend?
We do the Saturday Santa Rosa and during the winter season. And then the summer season, it kicks in, and we do actually two on Saturday, Santa Rosa and
Healdsburg.
And Healdsburg, pretty much the same times, around 8 to 1 or so. Mm-hmm. And then we do Sundays in Marin at the Civic Center, and that one's 8 to 1 as well. And then in this season now, Sebastopol has started, and we've not made it to that market yet this year, but we're getting there soon.
Oh, good. That's my market.
That's
beautiful.
Where we started, too.
Yeah. And you're still doing, in addition to the pork, you do bacon, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're still doing your bacon. That's important.
Uh-huh.
Why?
Everyone loves bacon. It's a very visceral response that people have with bacon. You know, we have lots of, it's different. The women, a lot of times, will cry about bacon.
They'll cry?
About just memories, you know. People have these really strong memories associated with the smells of, like, bacon or ham.
Sure.
And I'm not kidding. It definitely evokes an emotional response.
It's from hanging out with Grandma and Grandpa back in the day when everybody just grew their own food before the big O word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Marisa, talk about how you structure your business.
My family started Ritz Food Service in the 50s.
Oh,
Grandpa started that.
Uh-huh.
And my dad's been running that for, I guess, like 30 years now. And he bought Sonoma Direct, which is a USDA meat plant, and it's out in Petaluma. And he wanted to provide his customers with something that was local and special. We have a full staff of butchers, so he wanted to be able to give people a custom cut and just have that old school butcher shop feel of like, yeah, I want my steaks, you know, yay high. And so that was the initial intent. And then he asked me to run it, and I was buying this meat in boxes that came from I don't know where, and it was frozen, and I just felt really, it didn't feel good to me at all. So I started talking to ranchers, and we devised a program where I have a set of standards of how they're raised, which I worked on with a rancher, Joe Posey. And he had a program already gathering wool from local ranchers that he's been doing for about 20 years. And so we had this perfect marriage of he already had the relationship and I had the need. So he works with me to get the meat from the ranchers. Mm-hmm. There's about 20 of them and they're all in Sonoma and Marin. They're mostly about 10 miles from each other out by Bodega, Tamales, mm-hmm. Valley Ford kind of area. And we buy meat every week and then we process it. Mm-hmm.
You say you have a set of standards, I'm wondering if we can make a parallel to what Clover does. Say Clover's mm-hmm. Organic program.
Sure.
They have standards that the dairies that they buy the milk from have to meet. So is it a similar sort of thing?
It's similar, yeah. We audit the ranches. So every ranch that we use, we know their whole, ranch plan, how the animals move through their life cycle. The main standards are that it's grass-fed. It's never put on a feedlot. It spends its whole life on one ranch. They're mostly naturally weaned. They're outside most of their life. Joe is on the conservation board, Joe Posey, and so there's a lot of conservation ranch management built into it, land conservation. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty comprehensive plan, and the ranchers have been really flexible about growing and doing things differently and, continuing to develop to be more sustainable. And
mm-hmm. And then who are your customers? How is it sold?
Well, we sell to all the restaurants that Ritz Food sells to. And then.
And so can people buy it through Ritz?
People can buy it through Ritz. Mm-hmm. People can call me up. I have a lot of customers that, just stop by the plant, which is really cool. And then this year I started doing retail. So I've actually started branding it as Sonoma Direct Lamb. It's in all the Whole Foods in Northern California. It's in a lot of grocery stores in Northern California, mm-hmm. which has been really exciting. And a huge part of the program is that we pay the ranchers about 20% over market price mm-hmm. in order to, like Clover, to get what we, what we agree to and to get them to stick to the affidavit and be flexible with us. So I have to get more from the grocery store mm-hmm. in the end, and they have to ask their customers for more.
Sure.
So everyone's been really cool about it and really receptive for the most part.
It's a great program. I'm really happy to know about it. You are listening to Mouthful on KRCB.
Eat steak, eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, eat steak, do we have one deer? Eat beef, 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 it's a mighty good food. It's a great A meal when I'm in the mood. Cowpokes will come from the near and far when you throw a few ribeyes on the farm. Roberta Duran ate two before a fight, cause it gives a mighty man an awful lot of mighty mind. Eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, do we have one deer? Eat beef, eat beef, it's a mighty good food. It's a great A meal when I'm in the mood. Eat meat, eat meat, filet mignon. Eat meat, eat meat, eat it all day long. Eat a few T-bones till you get your fill. Eat a New York cut, hot off the grill. Eat steak, eat a big old steer.
It's Mouthful, it's KRCB, it is Earth Day. We are talking about locally raised meats north of the Golden Gate, mostly Marin, Sonoma, and Mendocino counties now involved. Let's talk about the price, the cost. You can go into some store, you can buy really cheap meat. I think people go to places, like big box stores, and I don't know what they pay, but that seems to be, stores like that seem to be where all the E. coli stuff comes from, You pay, 99 cents a pound for ground beef that's from, 72 different cows in one beef patty, and the next, which is, that's just really troublesome on its own if you mm-hmm. want to think about it. And then the next thing you have an E. coli outbreak. Let's talk about the economics of what happens when you're growing meat locally and working with specific animals, processing single animals.
Uh-huh.
We were just talking about the price of land in California. I mean, we live in this stunningly beautiful place, and it's highly prized. And I know a lot of the ranchers that I work with, they're fifth generation. And the families are getting to a point now where, you know, half the family doesn't want to raise meat anymore. Or, you know, they're splitting their desires and they're splitting their land. And a lot of people are moving off of the land because they can't afford to stay on it anymore. And, you know, that's really changing the face of what's available out here. So that's part of it. I mean, just that land is so expensive and there's a lot better ways to use it financially, because our ranchers here are not getting subsidies. Their life is not subsidized. And
yeah, and if you take a big parcel of land and you sell it to a developer who's going to, you know, build houses, the return on it is tremendous.
Right.
Versus mm-hmm. versus having, you know, a bunch of sheep.
Yeah.
That what a sheep, what do they sell for? How would you sell a sheep? If you're selling a sheep on a lamb on the commodity market, you're selling for a whole lamb by the pound, I assume.
Well, they're selling by the pound, and the biggest buyer that I know of around here is Superior, and they're the largest lamb processor in the country. And most ranchers will just sell one time a year. And then Superior will come in, like, middle of June usually, buy up all their lamb, and then they'll take this lamb that's delicious and grass-fed and was raised with their mother and is a really special product from Sonoma County, and they'll put it on a feedlot for 6 months. And they'll just keep putting more and more fat on it until they decide to release it because of, you know, a butterfly flapped its wings in Mongolia or whatever is going on with the meat market. Like, it's so international, you know. Uh-huh. So they're like, okay, now we need to get rid of 500 lambs, and they'll take them off the feedlot and sell them.
And so they'll be selling them. They will have already bought them 6 months previously. What would they have paid Superior for?
I think market right now is about $1.90 a pound.
$1.90 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
And then if your rancher's doing your own lamb, what do you pay for it? I guess I should say.
Well, we pay about 25% above that.
Above that.
Yeah, but we agree on a price at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. That we think is going to remain above market.
Mm-hmm.
The ranchers agree to that at the beginning of the year. And we never change our price because we're trying to create a market where people are paying the real value of the meat, what it costs for someone to raise it and for everyone to make a little bit of a profit. And that's not the meat market in this country, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a commodity market. So it's hard to explain that to people, you know, that the way that you're paying for lamb right now, there's no way a rancher can live off that, what he got, you know.
And then you have, for a long time, New Zealand lamb has been an issue. Competition with New Zealand lamb, is that still?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they do it. Magicians over there, but I mean, it's the price of land and labor.
Mm-hmm.
And they can ship it over here and they can raise it much, you know, much cheaper.
They have like three lambs for every person in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
We've got a lot of lambs.
No, Brock, it seems like the two of you have been able to, you know, sort of buck the tide. And that you've bought land that you're keeping in agriculture at a time when so much land is leaving agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And you have no problem selling your product.
No problems at all.
What sort of pricing do you have on your meats?
Well, when you compare it with stuff that you can buy at the grocery store, then our prices are really high. But it's a product that, so far, I haven't been able to find really anywhere else. But to make it work the best for us so that we can pay our bills and everything, we do not so many whole lambs and a lot of lambs in cut form, which cuts out the middleman factor and makes it so that we can see a little more of the profit off the product. But pretty much the cheapest cuts of lamb individually started around $10 a pound, and up to, you know, the mid-20s for loin chops and racks and stuff like that.
Now, if you're shopping at one of the higher end grocery stores, Pacific Markets, that sort of thing, you know, it's very common to see things 20, 22, 24, 29, 99 a pound for beef and lamb. So I think people have gotten used to paying, you know, people who shop in those sorts of markets. I don't think it's so difficult to transition those people from paying that price for something they don't really know where it's come from to getting the same, so spending the same amount of money at the farmer's market.
Right.
Now, how do you, it's a very perishable product. How does that part of things work? And I know it works differently for Sonoma Direct than it does for Black Sheep Farm. So,
as far as being perishable,
well, I mean, how do you? What form does it come in at the market?
We get our stuff that we're going to take to the market, cut and wrapped at up in Orland at Johannesson's Quality Meats, and they flash freeze at processing, so we can store our meat. We'll get around six or so at a time, like pigs, for example, done, and then they all get flash frozen, and then we can, you know, store that in freezers at our space, and then take it to the market over the next couple of months or so. And
And flash freezing is different than what you do at home, say, taking a piece of meat and putting it into your home freezer. Right. It's a different process. Can you explain it a little bit?
I'm not a pro about it, but just working in the restaurant industry and working with seafood and whatnot that's been flash frozen, it's just a much colder freeze, a much faster
really
deeper
fast,
freeze.
Yeah.
And it
I haven't
doesn't disrupt
it.
The... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I guess it doesn't disrupt the fibers and doesn't change much, disrupt the meat as much as a slow freeze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it... with whole salmon. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it with meat, but up in Alaska on Kodiak Island, a lot of the salmon is frozen, flash frozen, and it's on this big circular conveyor belt. And I think, if I remember correctly, it's sprayed with water as it's going into the conveyor belt, and it comes out about 45 seconds later, and it is frozen solid.
Wow.
No, I don't think it's quite
that.
It's not quite that fast,
belt,
if that's the definition of flash.
Well, it just goes around. I mean, maybe it just seemed that fast because it was so, I mean, it was happening so quickly and on such a big scale, but it was these huge things, and it just was constantly taking them in and then putting them out really fast. Anyway.
The main thing with our stuff being perishable is air, you know. If air gets into the package with frozen meats, it destroys or degrades it pretty quickly. So we have all our stuff cryovac'd where there's, you know, it's vacuum sealed and there's no air. We found packages that have somehow made it to the back of the freezer for a really long time. We found ground beef before that's a year and a half old, and it's awesome.
It's still okay.
Yeah, as long as the packaging.
So, but we tend punctured. To all of our animals tend to rotate on a monthly basis. You know, we butcher as much as we can market in a month.
And then how about Sonoma Direct? Are you selling fresh?
We sell everything fresh. It's sort of a math problem every week because, you know, we're killing 100 lamb a week or whatever it is that week, and some of the stuff we're selling in whole carcass, which is easy. It comes in, it goes out. But a lot of the stuff we sell racks or, you know, and then we've got the rest of the animal hanging out. So I have to find the right customers for everything, which is, so far it's working out. But
yeah, there's a restaurant in San Francisco. You probably know the people. Ray Tang is the chef.
Sure, yeah, I know. I think he's going to buy shoulder chops from us.
We were just talking, and he said he likes to find the cuts that Boulevard and the other places that are serving just, you know, the loin. Yeah. He likes to find the cuts that they aren't serving. And I think partly, I mean, not so much because he's trying to save money, but because to him that's part of sustainability, is using the whole thing. And it's something I completely agree with him. And it's also, if you do that, you're getting some of the best tasting stuff as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I made something with the shoulder tonight.
Oh,
and I think
what did you make? Let's see.
I made a Moroccan tagine.
Oh, yeah.
With prunes. But, I mean, I think the shoulder is delicious. It has so much more flavor. But, you know, everybody wants the rack. And I guess it looks pretty nice on the plate.
I've been eating shoulder chops since I was a little girl. I absolutely loved them. Yeah. And they absolutely have great flavor.
Yeah.
I also noticed now on your website, you have took 4 pages to print out all the different things you offer. One of the things, two of the things, lamb cheeks and lamb tongue.
Yeah.
Talk to me. Being a major proponent of the deliciousness of lamb's tongue.
Yeah.
The first time I ever went into the restaurant K&L Bistro, I think they'd been open a week, there was lamb's tongue on the menu. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. they couldn't sell a lot of it in Sebastopol, at least not when they opened in late 2001.
Yeah.
The only place I ever see it on the menu now is over at Bistro Gentil. And it's always on the menu at Bistro Gentil.
Yeah, French people are a little more, I guess it's not adventurous, it's just tradition, but they're more open to it. But don't sell a lot of it, I'll be honest with you.
No.
I sell some cheeks. But the way that the slaughter business works is our slaughterhouse keeps the head. And so if we want it, we have to buy it back from them. Apparently, they all go to Japan. I don't know what they're doing with these millions of lamb heads, but...
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's kind of a special order sort of thing.
Special order. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I never saved the cheeks before. What exactly does the cheeks of a lamb weigh?
I think it's like 1.5 ounces, 2 ounces.
Wow.
They're really tender and quite delicious. Yes.
Well, if you've ever had a taco cabeza, you know, which is a beef cheek taco, it's absolutely the most tender, flavorful part. It's really good. And I've never had lamb cheeks. I've never had an opportunity to have lamb cheeks.
Might have to work that out.
Hey, we're going to take another little musical break on that note. We'll be right back with more talk on Mouthful. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. Thanks for sticking with us. We're going to be eating some Moroccan tagine in just a little bit. Nicolette, our new intern, is warming it up. Until that happens, let's talk about some of the things people don't like to talk about. The abattoir, for example, the slaughterhouse, crucial. One of the things that has to be available to a rancher. And then also the fact that we live in dairy country. We have best milk in America comes from Northern California. We also have a big cheese industry, including goat cheese industry. With those things, you have you're going to have veal because, you know, little boy cows don't grow up to give milk, and little boy goats don't grow up to give milk. So, you know, it's just is not going to happen.
No, ma'am.
So you inevitably end up with goat meat or cabrito. Certainly in the with a big, you know, Latino community, I assume that that's where I go to get goat, is I go to like Lola's or something. That's where I've gone in the past. And then there's also the question of veal, which it's, you know, sort of scary to even say it in public. Here, I'll say the other two, foie gras. So those are the two things that
she's
can...
She's bursting into flames.
Nothing's happened yet. The sky hasn't fallen. So anyway, let's talk, you know, I just put a whole bunch of stuff on the table. Where do you want to take it?
Maybe a little education about veal. People have probably pretty ugly.
I mean, veal is, at this point, it's a waste product of the dairy industry. It's... steer calves who get no colostrum, they get sold, and they usually get killed the sooner the better, because the more money you put into them, the more money you lose. And they're pumped full of antibiotics, and they're penned up, and they're pretty sickly animals.
And what market are they sold on?
That's the commodity market.
Okay,
I mean,
commodity market.
Yeah.
And are they sold as veal, or are they sold for beef byproducts and that sort of thing?
I don't know if they're put through beef channels, but that's what veal is.
Mm-hmm, veal is baby cow.
Yeah,
cow.
I mean it's an animal that's kept alive for a very short period of time on antibiotics that lives a pretty miserable life.
And then you see sometimes on certain restaurant menus, in certain places, you see range-fed veal. Mm-hmm.
That's more like baby beef, they call it, or they're calling it rosé veal, because it doesn't have the same white meat, mm-hmm. because it has protein in its system, because it's allowed to move around now and everything after horrible reaction to it in the 80s of animals being penned up and everything. But yeah, it's just a young cow. It eats grass, and it might get some milk, and it probably has a less miserable life. It probably got some colostrum.
Mm-hmm. And colostrum, we should explain what colostrum is.
It's all the nutrients that you get mm-hmm. in the first 3 days of life from your mother's breast milk, mm-hmm. whatever sort of animal you might be.
Yeah, including humans, whatever.
Yeah. It's your immune system, basically.
Exactly.
But range-fed could still be pumped full of antibiotics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So... veal can be a really great meat. I mean, we're working with an organic dairy person right now to start a program where, you know, they're treated with respect, they stay with their mothers.
It's sort of amazing that you have to talk to an organic dairy about treating veal with respect.
Yeah.
He is right now, but he's not marketing his calves, and I don't want to say his name because we haven't signed on the dotted line or anything yet, but there are ways of doing things. It's just going outside of a really well-established model that's profitable for people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of back in the system.
You haven't done any veal yet, have you?
I don't foresee a future mm-hmm. For us in the true definition of veal,
mm-hmm.
Because anything you get through us is definitely going to have some color in it.
Mm-hmm.
We do market, some other products that could be considered comparable with veal.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a lot of people are used to eating a lamb that weighs 90, 100 pounds when it's butchered. A lot of lambs weigh upwards of 75 at very least by the time they get butchered. But like with a lamb, since you're not milking the mom sheep, you can leave that lamb with this mom. All the way till the mom naturally weans it off mm-hmm. her. But what we do is as soon as we see that happen, we butcher the animal. And then you're, you know, working with a 50-pound lamb, 45-pound lamb.
Exclusively milk-fed.
And it's been raised on milk its whole mm-hmm. life. The level of tenderness of that meat is, I've never had any veal like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's right up there with sashimi and that kind of food.
And then you also do goat meat, right?
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
Same program, more mm-hmm. or less. We don't have nearly as many goats that we butcher just because our goat herd is a lot smaller right now
mm-hmm.
than our sheep herd. But we do butcher all the boys and, a few girls. For whatever reason, we're not going to keep in the herd.
Mm-hmm.
And, we butcher those animals about 45 pounds as well.
And then do you sell them as whole animals, or do you break those down as well?
We break, we prefer to break everything down. Mm-hmm. We do a couple whole animals just for whoever gets lucky enough to ask me on the right day.
Uh-huh. We have 8 available right now.
And we actually have 8 available right now.
Eight lambs.
Ready,
yeah.
Right.
8 lambs.
Be done whole.
That are ready, and we had them early in the year, so... we don't have scheduled USDA butcherings, but we could do whole local butchering through uh-huh. Willicide Meats.
Now, the whole issue of butchering, slaughterhouse, that sort of thing, that's a really complicated issue to try to understand. And it varies state by state.
Yeah.
Some states allow on-farm slaughter,
mm-hmm.
And then you can sell, but some don't. So what is it that... And we have less slaughterhouses today than we did, I guess, at any other time. Mm-hmm. What are the issues that, as people who are in the meat industry, what do you have to deal with when it comes to slaughterhouses? And finding them.
Yeah, finding them is really hard. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So what's going on with that right now?
The most I've heard is that there's a couple different financial groups that are looking at the economic feasibility of doing a slaughterhouse in either Sonoma County, or they've been looking in Mendocino County too. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the ideas, I think, are really great.
Because if this is still true, Nyman Ranch takes their
Nyman
beef.
Ranch just got bought by Del Monte Foods.
I predicted that.
And you actually don't order your meat from Nyman anymore. You order it from Del Monte.
Really?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I predicted that was what, they've clearly been positioning themselves to be bought out for quite a while.
Yeah, he's been out of the picture.
Well,
the cows, the meat was raised, when it was raised in Marin County, it was still trucked, to Iowa?
I think they had a plant in Oakland, but I don't know where they slaughtered.
I think it was in Iowa. It was definitely, or Utah. It was not in California. And I know if you go to Parker Ranch on Big Island in Hawaii, huge cattle ranch, the cattle are put on boats and brought to the United States, brought to the mainland to be slaughtered.
That's so traumatic.
It just seems like there is incredibly complicated economics and regulations about when it comes to what's possible with slaughterhouses. And what about the Petaluma slaughterhouse?
Rancho?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're slotted to close in a year. And what the scuttlebutt I've heard, I mean, there's been talk of buying it and continuing it, but, the property values in Petaluma are going up and up, and a slaughterhouse is a big, stinky, unpleasant sort of thing right in the middle of Petaluma. I mean, eventually city planners are going to take their license away. So nobody really wants to invest in fixing that place up, which it would need a little sprucing at this point. So, but there's just less and less. They're getting more and more consolidated, and the slaughterhouses are, in order to be economically viable, we were just talking about this before the show. It's kind of a heated subject. They're having to move meat from all over the world to keep their doors open and to stay profitable. And the little guys that are around the county are closing because they can't keep their doors open. Mm-hmm. So
how far do you have to take your animals to be harvested?
We take ours up to Orland, which is a couple of hours from where we are now.
Orland, and that's Orland.
On the 5.
On 5. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what?
We go to Superior and Dixon, which is probably our biggest competitor. So it's sort of a they're great, but it's they have a nice clean plant. But
And then how does that work? Do you have someone? What safeguards are in place so that you know that what you're taking is what you're getting?
They have a lot system, and when you drop the lambs off, they go to a certain pen, they get tagged, and it's really fancy there. I mean, they've got a system that gives them an item number, basically, that's your lot, and they go through. And as soon as they're in packaging, they have that number on them, and it goes through the hole. They've got conveyor belts and all kinds of fancy, So you just hope that you're getting, there's a system there. I hope it works.
Yeah. Ours is a business that's been owned since 1904 by the same family. Great-grandfather, grandfather, father, now son, has owned and run it. It's a lot different than that in the sense that we know it's our animals because we're friends with Chris. He's only, whenever we drop off, there's maybe 10 other animals there. We dropped off the other day, there was 3 pigs and about 5 sheep. So it's sort of really easy to keep track of what's what.
No, I think that's when we're laughing, but on the other hand, that's perfect.
It's a lot less of a computer.
Yeah, a handshake. And trust in another human.
Right. They have 8 employees at the plant, And one of those is a USDA inspector.
And they're always, they're actually an employee of the slaughterhouse. Is that right? They have to be there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they observe everything? And
yeah, they're constantly bantering back and forth, you know, because they're like family at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so something smells good.
Forks.
Okay, so why don't you talk about what it is? It's a tagine with prunes?
Yeah, there's prunes and orange flower water and some honey, and it's lamb shoulder. And this lamb is from Chris Cornett's ranch out near Valley Ford. And, yeah, this is sort of the first lamb of spring. So,
true spring lamb.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's some bread here, too.
I'm just passing down.
Okay, yum. Okay, here, Lawrence, I should give you some. It looks really good.
Yeah.
So my next question was, do you eat your own product? And I guess here's the answer.
Oh, yeah.
It gets to be where it's pretty strange eating meat from anywhere else.
Yeah. It freaks me out.
Yeah.
tell us a little bit more about that.
You know, you just get a... Once you've been through the process of the birth of the animal and the witnessing the animal's whole life, and you've been there for every single thing, and then you finish the cycle, then you consume what you've just worked so hard to make. Well, the animals have worked hard to make for you, and it's just an amazing feeling. I don't really think there's anything that is comparable for me anyways. And when we go out, it's sort of always... sort
you
of a
fish.
Bummer. It's sort of a bummer for me. You know, I'm just like, I wish that we could just bring something in our pocket and be like, hey, just put this in New York instead. You know,
it's really fun. Sometimes there's other farms that we've not known about.
True.
We went out. Where did we go? Oliveto.
Yeah, and we went to a place in Oakland. Oliveto, and they were supporting a bunch of local farms. That it was really neat. Rare though.
Yeah, they're really good about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're finding more and more places. I think that the whole idea of knowing where your food is from, it's really entered the mainstream with Michael Pollan's book.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. It's really being discussed in the commons these days.
Yeah.
So has that increased your business?
I have chefs seek me out all the time. I mean, I think that Sonoma County and Marin County, there's so many people who have... They want to serve really good food, but they also have really high ethics about their food and what they have a sense of responsibility about what they're giving to people. And it's really inspiring. I mean, I have chefs ask me questions sometimes. I'm like, I'll have to go check with someone about that. I mean, people really ask questions.
Nice.
What sort of information do people seem to want these days?
Exactly where it's coming from. What did it eat? When was it born? You know, I mean, why isn't the land certified organic? You know.
Mm-hmm. Do you get that? Do you get a lot of questions about the organic certification?
Yeah. We do get a lot of questions about that.
No, are you certified?
We aren't.
And I think that that's gotten... I think that's a sort of complicated issue for people since the federal government took over the definition.
Well, once they got the word under their control and could decide what that word meant, it seemed like there was a lot of the initial purpose of being organic that was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned into a marketing ploy. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, you know, a lot of large companies that are now doing it organically where they used to be in it conventionally isn't a good thing, because I think it is. But at the same time, you know, it's the same exact model that got us in this position with conventional foods,
mm-hmm.
where we don't know where anything is coming from, mm-hmm. and there's all kinds of poison in the food, you know. Huge organic farms aren't really the answer to that, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So we choose not to be certified. We could be very easily.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have asked us, you know, why don't you? Is it a cost thing? No, it's none of those things. It's that our practices are based on what we think is best for our animals. And a lot of cases, that's a lot higher standards than what the USDA would ask me to do if I wanted to be certified organic. So we just try to have that relationship with the consumer and talk, you know, face-to-face about whatever questions they might have so that we can clear up, you know, their confusion.
Well, good for you. That's I really, I love what you all do. And it, like I said, I'm so happy to find out what you're doing.
The tagine is excellent.
You can cook. This is really, really so excellent.
Tender. Aw, thanks.
Tender and really nice flavors. Nice flavors. One of the things I read in preparing for tonight's show, I just went to read about slaughterhouses. And one thing here, which I almost fell out of my chair laughing. It says talking about the reason that Nyman Ranch meats taste so good, which I'm not saying they do. I'm just saying this is the context of
they're
the.
They're better than average.
They're definitely far superior than standard commodity meats. It says the reason that they taste so good is that Nyman Ranch says a prayer for each cow before they slaughter it. And this got passed on for a while. It's like, no, they don't. No, they don't, for sure. They don't. I know they don't.
Is that in their HACCP plan?
The guys that work at the plant might. You know, it's in Iowa.
That's true. We definitely kiss most of our animals on a daily basis. Kisses, scratches, songs. Some prayers.
Yeah, songs.
Definitely songs.
You sing to them?
They love being
sort
sung to.
Sort of passes the, you know.
How can you tell me about that? I think that's really, and I'm really serious.
How could you is the biggest question.
Hmm?
How could you
No, how can
this?
You, no. How can you, what signal do you get from them that they're enjoying it?
Oh, so you can just feel it, just like with a friend or with, you know, another human. Just, you know. Physical responses and the feeling in the air, and
that's really interesting because I know, say, with a baby, you know, who's maybe restless or that sort of thing, you sing even if you don't have, you know, a great voice. You sing and you sort of you can see everything just relax. And I hadn't thought about that with animals, but it makes total sense. I'm going to go home and sing to my cat.
Oh yeah,
we they definitely like certain, you know, we'll play them music occasionally too. You know, if we have a music-making device in proximity. And, you know, they really like certain kinds of music.
What do they tune?
They really like reggae a lot.
Really?
I like dub and bass. Yeah, it's
really they like dub. That's true.
I had a parakeet that absolutely loved the Ramones.
Oh, man.
You know, I sort of thought, you know, oh, it's a bird. I should probably be playing, I don't know, some sort of classical music for it. And it wouldn't respond. And whenever I put the Ramones on, it's, you know, it'd start bouncing up and down.
Parakeets are kind of punk rock. They got the right hairdo.
Yeah, it's true.
They got the hawk. The original.
So, wow, we just entered a whole new territory.
Oh, man. Yeah, song.
Well, this is really... really excellent. I have to take one more bite. So before I do that, Marisa, I know that. I've been wanting to call you that all night, and I cannot tell you why. I have no idea.
My mom's name is Margot.
Huh, interesting. Maybe I'm channeling. Talk about your website, and talk about the best way for people who are not chefs, who are not going to buy through Ritz. What's the best way for just home cooks to get your lamb?
You can email me through the website. My email is marisa@sonomadirect.com. That's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. My phone number is 707-795-1283.
That's 707-795-1283. And the website is sonomadirect.com?
Yep. And I pick up the phone a lot of the time, so...
Cool.
You know, we'll drive something out to people if you can come by the plant and... we ship stuff to people.
So. Oh, you do ship?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're pretty flexible.
Okay. Now, the list of products available and the size of the box, do people have to stick to that, or do you break down to other quantities?
Yeah, we don't really do minimums. I mean, it would be nice, but...
So you'll sell, somebody needs something, call you, they can buy it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And again, Brock and Deanna, we should go through the... farmers markets, and is there any way for people to get your product if for whatever reason they can't get to one of the several farmers markets you go to?
Oh, sure. We have our number, which is our cell, and that's our business line, and you can always call anytime if you have any requests, or we can meet somewhere, or, you know, come to your house, come to our house.
This is so nice.
Yeah. 707-489-2814 is the business number.
That's 707-489-2814. And the let me see if I have this right. Farmers markets on Saturday, starting, I think, after May 1st, it'll be both Hillsburg and the Santa Rosa Farmers Market mm-hmm. on yeah. Saturdays. On Sunday, the Marin County Farmers Market mm-hmm. and the Sebastopol Farmers Market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there others?
No, okay. Not as of right now, mm-hmm. but we also can ship.
Okay, you can ship. That's great.
You know, we've actually shipped to Phoenix, Arizona last year. One is 117, and they got there fine.
Yeah, so
it's an amazing mail system we have.
Cool. We've got like two more minutes here. So what should I have asked you that I haven't asked you yet?
I think one thing that I wanted to say on the real estate topic, because mm-hmm. I think to me that's the most important missing link that a lot of people are having a hard time talking about is farming and being able to farm as a living and wanting these quality food products, but at the same time feeling comfortable selling a house that you bought for $110,000 for $500,000 doesn't really work out in the end. Mm-hmm. So I just hope that there's some way that in the, you know, as we get more people involved with the whole local food movement and everything, that people start to see that other decisions that they make in their life also affect farmers and their ability to get quality, healthy foods.
Mm-hmm. Really well put. Thank you for saying that. It's just absolutely dead on too. It's what I think about every time I leave my house mm-hmm. and start driving. It's what I think about. And it's what will destroy, you know, the goose that laid the golden egg.
Mm-hmm. If, without even really knowing it.
Yeah.
Or really think of it, you know.
Yeah, who can live in a house and pay $800,000 for something that, you know, in 1975 cost $53,000?
Exactly.
If that's what Sonoma County, if that's what the North Bay becomes, it's no longer an agricultural community. It's just inevitable that will be gone in another generation.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing, too, because the North Bay was so agricultural. I mean, this was such a hugely productive region. Relatively recently, you know, mm-hmm. 30 years ago even, it was yeah. an amazing agricultural region. And it all can change so fast, you know. There's going to have to be people are going to have to start applying morals to capitalism.
Yes, and that is a perfect note on which to end Mouthful's Earth Day show, Morals to Capitalism. Well, thanks to all three of you for the really good work that you do. And thanks to you for tuning in. Be sure to tune in next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Support for Mouthful comes from KRCB Radio members and from JAG Public Relations, providing comprehensive marketing for the hospitality industry with an emphasis on wine, food, and beverages. JAG Public Relations will manage your web content and provide your graphic and still photography needs. More information at 707-795-9400 or at jagpublicrelations.com. We also have support from River Rock Casino, Sonoma County's 24-hour entertainment entertainment destination, just off Highway 128 on the Dry Creek Rancheria in Geyserville.
It's time for dinner now, let's go. I got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, let praise be. Let it be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans.